All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching this American Vindicta show. We are on the America's Most Unexplained series, talking about UFOs, and today we have with us a great man, Timothy Alberino. And for starters, Tim is a well-known explorer. He has a really good book out there called The Birthright. He'll be hosting a conference over the birthright in Tennessee here soon. We'll let him speak to you a little bit about that. But I want to give you an interview with Tim because, as we were talking previously, Tim has a different aspect, a different outlook on the whole UFO alien agenda thing. And my goal of all this is to be able to give you as many different views into this reality as possible. You know, I think it helps you as the listener, as the viewer, to put together this problem in your mind much better when we have a whole different perspective constantly. And, you know, because the alien agenda, the alien UFO deception, whatever it is that we want to call it, it comes at us from different angles. And the government's not exactly going to tell us everything that's out there. So that's why we have to lean on the shoulders upon wiser men like Tim Alberino. So, Tim, for starters, man, I know you're really busy all the time. Thank you a lot for making this time for us today to give us this briefing. And with that being said, let's get straight into it.
I'm not sure I would describe myself as a wiser man, but I appreciate the compliment. Yeah, as you said, I have a well, thanks for having me on, Doug. It's always fun to talk to you. As you said, I have a different view than most. I would say I have a different view than most Christians regarding the UFO topic and the alien topic, the broader alien question. But also, I have a very different view from most ufologists at this point. I find it interesting that both Christians who approach the subject and traditional secular ufologists are sort of drifting into the same direction. And I'm holding out on the position that was the original position of the old school ufologists, the guys that really were very, very good investigators early on because there was no internet back when ufology really got going back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Of course, there was no internet yet. And so these guys were actually having to do interviews with people who had encounters with UFOs and with abductees and so forth. And they were spending a lot of time talking, trying to develop government sources and talking to scientists. Whereas today, most of the information, most of the research done on UFOs and aliens is secondhand. It's looking things up on the internet. It's listening to podcasts, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. I do a lot of that myself, but that's why I revert back to the old school guys. And I like to read and find old interviews with these guys and gals, and return to the roots of ufology. Cause I think that the investigations and the conclusions, I think, were the most correct in the beginning. And what I mean by that is there's a tendency today to, if you're a Christian, to spiritualize the whole, the phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon, and especially the abduction phenomenon. And if you're in the secular ufological camp, there's a tendency to also to do the same, really, to spiritualize it, but from a different perspective, obviously, not from a Christian perspective, more so from a New Age perspective. And where both camps meet, where they cross paths, is in this idea of a ultra-dimensional or extra-dimensional explanation for UFOs and extraterrestrials. I do not reject that theory, the ultra-dimensional or extra-dimensional theory. I think that there is something to it. However, I think it's secondary, at least in my contemplation of aliens and UFOs, it's secondary. I am more focused on the physical aspect of the phenomenon, which is undeniable. Now, the supernatural aspect of the phenomenon is unconfirmed and unconfirmable. And so it's really a dead end. And you're just left with perspectives and opinions at that point. And you're left with ideologies. You're left with doctrines in some cases. And I have no use for that. What I try and focus on is what can be investigated, what is tangible.
Data-driven.
What we can touch and see, and what we can investigate, and what we can, what kind of hard information, actionable information we can discern from the phenomenon, because therein lies the truth. The truth does not lie in some kind of a inexplicable dimensional sort of explanation, because when you talk about extra dimensions, and again, let me say, I'm a proponent of the idea that there are more than the three spatial dimensions and the one of time that we inhabit. But we have to understand right out of the gates, we have to understand what we're talking about here. We have to parse our terms. A lot of people confuse extra spatial dimensions, which are called hyper dimensions, with alternative worlds, alternate worlds. Which is more in line with the multiverse. So the multiverse, of course, propounds that there are other universes out there that are operating on other laws of physics and so forth. And there's a myriad of different ideas revolving around the multiverse and multiple dimensions. But to simplify it, one theory says that there are extra spatial dimensions to the universe that we presently inhabit, to our known universe. This is, we've seen this in lots of movies, most popularly Star Wars. You know, that's when they jump space in Star Wars, or whatever they call that. I can't remember what that's called. But when they go into hyperspace, hyperdrive, when they go into hyperspace, hyperdrive, it's based on physics in Star Wars. They actually, Lucas based this concept on principles in physics. Namely, that there is something called hyperspace. There's an extra spatial dimension to the physical world. And you can use that spatial dimension as a shortcut to get to other parts of the universe. And that's called hyperspace. And so that's why in Star Wars, they call it hyperdrive. And what they're doing is they're not jumping into a different dimensional world. They're accessing a different spatial dimension within our universe. Okay. And then you have what's popularized in the Marvel films series, which is a multiverse. And that means that there are other universes that are existing concurrent with ours. And that between our universes, there's like a veil of some kind. And if you were able to open that veil, you would see into another universe. And those are two different concepts. Those are two different concepts. So I am a proponent of the first. I believe that there are extra spatial dimensions, hyperspace, which, by the way, is a function of string theory. String theory posits that there are at least 10 spatial dimensions to the known universe. There are proponents of string theory who also subscribe to the multiverse, like Michio Kaku, but we should not confuse the two. So most Christians and most ufologists today who come from a spiritual or supernatural perspective look at the phenomenon through a multiverse lens. In other words, we are inhabiting our universe, But there's this thin veil that if you can penetrate beyond that veil, you will see another universe. And Christians call this the spiritual world or the supernatural world. And frankly, New Age people refer to it much the same term. So the question is that an accurate view of the universe? From my perspective, the answer is no. I do not believe in a multiverse. I believe there is one universe, one creation, and that everything in creation, visible and invisible, as Paul says, is part of the same universe. There isn't a separate universe for quote unquote spiritual beings and another universe for physical beings. There isn't a division between the spirit, the carnal and the spiritual, or the material and the spiritual. There is no division. It's two sides of the same coin. Human beings are perfect examples of this. We are spiritual beings who inhabit physical bodies. We're not two separate people. We're not a spiritual person and then a carnal person. We are one person. We're one person with facets, different facets of being. We have a spiritual man and we have a carnal man. No, that's not two separate people. It's two sides of the same coin. And this is important for me because I come from what's called a Christocentric perspective. And the Christocentric perspective is based on Colossians 15. I can't remember the verse, actually. I've quoted it so many times, and I'm just so bad with numbers that I can't remember numbers. I have a hard time remembering birthdays for that reason. So not an excuse, but it's just a reality. So in Colossians, Paul says that he defines Christ as what I call the singularity. He doesn't use that term. That's a new term, singularity. But he defines Christ as the source, the creator and the source of all things, by whom and through whom and for whom all things were created, both visible and invisible. And so there's a singular source for creation and there is a singular creation. So that's the view that I come from. And so from that worldview, I look out at the creation that we can see. And I believe that the universe is indeed very, very large, unfathomably large, and that this is the creation. It's not that this is only a tiny part of creation and that there's this other spiritual dimension or multiverse universe that's out there that we don't have access to. Rather, I believe we are already inhabiting this wondrous universe in which all things exist. Some of those things are perceivable to us. Other facets of this reality are not perceivable to us. I call that perceptual black matter. And we cannot perceive some of the spatial dimensions, the spatial facets of this one singular universe. So, from my perspective, when we talk about aliens and UFOs and angels, which are extraterrestrials, when we get into this subject, we are dealing with the universe. We're not dealing with a spiritual world, a separate world like a Narnia or something like that, that's existent, that's parallel to our universe. We're dealing with our universe, the one we can touch and feel and interact with. We're dealing with our solar system and our galaxy and the greater universe. Now, this is, of course, a very rudimentary view, and this is the most natural view. It seems unnatural to me that people are reaching for an explanation that goes beyond our universe. And in fact, I find it to be quite confusing and confounding because the universe that we presently inhabit is exceedingly mysterious. We know very little about it. And aside from the flat earth community, you know, I'm not a flat earther. Most people accept the fact that we live on a planet and that there are other planets in the vicinity of our galaxy, and that we have the technology or will eventually have the technology to visit some of those planets, especially Mars. We already have the technology. We have the technology right now to go to Mars. Now, it's not perfected, but the essentials of that technology are there. They just need to be further developed. But we can go to Mars, and we will. So if we can look up in the night sky and see this planet that's very visible, especially with a high-powered telescope, so is Saturn and these other planets, Venus. I mean, you can see the rings of Saturn in a telescope. And the telescope technology is getting stronger and stronger and stronger and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So you can buy an entry-level telescope and see the rings of Saturn. And so we can see these planets, and we can get to one of them now, or at least the technology is in place to do so. So why are we all of a sudden, Christians and ufologists, discarding the natural explanation of where aliens come from? Other planets. Why do we have this need to discard this most obvious of resolutions to this question? And I'm having a hard time understanding some of my colleagues who are so quick to discard the idea that let's say the gray aliens might be a different race of entities inhabiting the universe, inhabiting perhaps a different planet, who are intruding into our planet. And this is our planet. This planet belongs to, well, let's put it this way. This planet is legally governed by the offspring of Adam. This is our domain. This is Adam's domain, planet Earth. And the Bible puts it in those terms, by the way. It's a galactic The Bible puts the story of mankind into a galactic context, and I demonstrate that in my book Birthright. So, to wrap this up, I'm coming from that most natural perspective, that most obvious perspective, that old school perspective, both in terms of a Christian worldview, and both in terms of also in terms of the old school ufological view. That says, okay, we have these non-human entities that are interacting with mankind. They're in possession and utilizing advanced aerospace technology. That is not spiritual, some kind of a spiritual ruse. It's actual physical technology that we can reverse engineer certain components of it and have. So this technology is being fabricated somewhere other than the Earth, most likely, or at least it's very, very possible, plausible that is in fact the case. And so I look up at the night sky and I see the planets, and people dispute that those are planets today, some Christians, which I find quite ridiculous, especially since you can grab a telescope and look at them, and clearly they're planets. And so why then would I not just assume that that entities are coming from those other realms, planetary realms? And so that's sort of a summation of how my view differs from others who would say, some of my colleagues would say, no, these beings are not coming from a different planet. Rather, they're coming from a different dimension. Well, the problem with different dimensions is we don't know what we're talking about. You nor I nor any human being can actually visualize another higher dimension. Now we're talking about the traditional understanding of a dimension that, we live in a three spatial dimensional environment. But if there's another fourth dimension, a higher dimension, spatial dimension, which I do believe exists, but not the way we think of it, our brains can't even conceptualize that. It's literally impossible. Our brains can only conceptualize in 3D. We cannot conceptualize four dimensions. We can't. It's impossible. So why are we so eager to talk about another dimension and to think that we know how to conceptualize that? And when we see a UFO appear in the sky, we conclude it came from another dimension. We've never seen another dimension. We have no idea what another dimension looks like, but we do know what a planet looks like. We live on one. You see what I'm saying? So why do we discard the obvious and reach for a view that is much more difficult?
I think part of that reason is because people feel like the church will scold you if you believe anything outside this very small scope of reference that the overall church looks at the world spiritually, right? If you believe at all that there is any chance of life elsewhere within the stars, then it would appear that some Christian leaders will say, now you're taking away from context from the Bible, or you are, I guess you could say, negating the laws that God has put on this planet. But, you know, I kind of agree with you. Those pertain to us. We know very little of what happens outside of us. We can't even tell, you know, for the longest time that Pluto wasn't even a planet. So we're just now at the point in time where we're actually relevant to anything that's happening off this planet.
Exactly.
We're like this far from relevancy. We can't even get rockets to come down from space accurately, but yet we have the technology, but the technology fails all the time. My problem with Mars is once we start that conquest of space, should we stop at Mars or should we continue to go further? Because if we continue to go further, then we have to advance technology. But at every era, at the advancement of technology comes great human suffering and wars. It wouldn't be a far cry to see a Earth-Mars war within, let's say, a couple hundred years if we were able to colonize, because now you're supposed to be giving taxes to us, or you're supposed to be X, Y, and Z. We need something that's on Mars, and humans screw it up. Politics, the need to rule and subjugate others instead of just the pure love of science and exploration. You know, I think the human element is the worst condition of the exploration of the stars, because we believe, for one thing, and I don't have a fixed belief. My firm foundation in beliefs is to always remain flexible. I don't believe in one theory. I want to hear them all. I'll figure it out. You know, that's my idea. I don't think anybody has it right. I think maybe everyone has a bit of the pieces, but there's no definitive way to say this one person is right. You know, but we can see, as you said, that there are stars. Look, I can almost reach out and touch a planet. How do I know there's not something on Saturn? How do I know there's not something on Mars? NASA's lied to us before. You know, we don't even know what's on the dark side of the moon, but yet people are going to tell you there's nothing that's coming from extra solar system type of craft.
And how can you make that? How can you say that with such certainty? And you're not. I mean, those who do.
Yeah.
How can you say with such certainty, as so many Christians do, oh, these entities don't come from other planets. They come from another dimension. How can you say that with any degree of certainty? Have you ever seen another dimension? Have you ever seen one?
I think the best documentation of anything out there, UFO related, and you'll probably know where I'm going with this when it comes to extra dimensional beings. And we probably don't need to get onto this realm right now, but that's the phenomena that is Skinwalker Ranch. And I believe like that within itself is its own weird little like.
Well, project. Here's what you have to understand, though, about when you're dealing with advanced technology, when you're dealing with the grays, especially. There's an aspect of ufology that's overlooked and not understood by a lot of Christian ufologists, if we can call them that. And it is something that the late Carla Turner wrote about in her books. She wrote a series of books about the abduction phenomenon. Both she and her family, her husband and her children, were all abductees. And Carla Turner was a very, very discerning, smart woman. You know, she was she had a doctorate in English studies, and she approached the topic from a very academic worldview, but she also approached the topic from a personal, experiential view. And Carla Turner talked about what she would call VRS scenarios, virtual reality scenarios. She would describe how abductees or anybody that is being subjected to alien technology is susceptible to virtual reality scenarios or scenes in which your perceived reality is being manipulated and altered. Your very perception of reality is being manipulated. And we know that we can do this ourselves, but you have to put on a headset right now, as it currently stands with our technology. You can put on a virtual reality headset, and your perception of reality is now suddenly altered. Now, we know because we're wearing the headset that we're wearing the headset, and if we take it off, then we're back to normal reality. But while you have that headset on, your brain is to some degree convinced that what you're seeing is real.
So you almost mean like holographic technology.
Yes, well, exactly. That's where I'm going. But let's just talk about this very rudimentary VR technology that we have as human beings. You know, the Oculus, for example, mm-hmm. and the metaverse. When you're in the metaverse, when my kids have an Oculus, so when you put the Oculus on, your brain does weird things at first, especially when you first do it. Your brain is just trying to figure out, it's adapting to this new reality. And you have there's sensory input that's going into your brain from this virtual world. And it becomes to some degree real to your brain. And it's not an entire immersion in a virtual world yet, but it will be. It will be at some point in the future. And everybody who has seen the movie Ready Player One, that is very, very accurate depiction of where we're going in terms of virtual reality. And so my point in saying that is that we can do this to a very small degree right now. But it appears that the aliens, and I'm going to call them that unabashedly, the aliens, especially the Greys, have the ability to encompass you in a virtual reality scenario and to alter your perception. They can do this in both the abduction, if you're an abductee, especially if you're an abductee, but even if you're not an abductee, they seem to be able to alter your perception. And so when we talk about Skinwalker Ranch, let's say, for the sake of argument, that there is a gray alien base underneath that ranch, and not just underneath that ranch, but the vicinity, that the larger area. So it encompasses a larger area than just the ranch. But let's say there's a gray alien base under the ground there, and they don't want people. They're trying to scare people away from that area or alter the perception of the individuals living in the vicinity so that they don't come to the realization that there is a gray alien base under the ground. In order to do that, what the Greys definitely do, and this comes not from some kind of science fiction, this comes from the empirical scientific data that has been collected by competent researchers, PhD guys in the field of alien abduction, and that has been confirmed and corroborated all over the world with abductees. And we're talking about physical evidence and every kind of evidence that would be valid in a court of law. The abductees are subjected to an environment in which everything that they experience is manipulated and controlled, so that they walk away from the experience with a controlled perspective. And it's deception at a level that we can't even comprehend yet. And so we, number one, this is like rule number one when dealing with the topic of aliens and especially alien abductions, or when dealing with Skinwalker Ranch. Number one, rule number one, you cannot trust your own perception of events. You can't. If you are dealing with gray aliens, you are likely going to be subjected to some form of manipulation as it pertains to your very perception. And the point of the manipulation, the virtual reality scenarios, is to throw you off the trail. And it's well known that the Greys use our own psyche against us. They use our own memories, and they use our own doctrines, our backgrounds, our worldviews, our ideologies. They use them to deceive us. And it's very advanced. And the reason why they can do this is because this is a telepathic race.
Can I ask you a question? You missed one thing, but I know you didn't miss, but you didn't mention one thing. The element of fear.
Mm-hmm.
The power that there is within fear is something many people, they seldom experience throughout their life, a real sense of fear as in I'm about to die. And that is a perceptual change. It's a psychosomatic change of chemicals that are released in the body that you can manipulate. The CIA has done it. They're very good at it. In the military, we've all experienced it to some extent to push you to another layer that's deep within the brain that very few times people get to access. But when you get there, I've noticed from doing my own investigation into a lot of the MUFON reports, a lot of the abductee reports, is that it is very similar to post-traumatic stress disorder.
It's
very similar to a psychotic breakdown. And if anything, it can actually, a lot of it be explained very well by a psychiatrist with psychotic breakdowns, using that element of fear to break barriers down. And I've heard people say that within the presence of the Greys, it's a very fear induced. Mm-hmm. They're dark. They're within the backgrounds. You can't see them very well. They scare you, and then bam, you're gone, and you're in a place you can't explain. And even within that, I would say, with the realms of what you're talking about with VR technology, hey man, if you were ever an abductee of the CIA and you got thrown into Gitmo, you probably thought you were not in a place that you thought you were, experiencing things you never thought you did.
I would agree, yeah. And they use hallucinogenics and all kinds of things to keep people in that state of mind.
We have a very barbaric sense of that. An advanced technology?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep. And so, what you're describing, I would call visceral dread. It's beyond fear. It's fear. Fear isn't like seeing a spider and, you know, and jumping or something, or having some kind of a reaction. No, visceral dread is all consuming. It changes, probably changes the chemistry of your brain.
Right.
In that moment. And that's just one example of how our perception can be altered. We all know that if you take psilocybin, you know, if you eat mushrooms, certain kinds of mushrooms, or if you drink ayahuasca, that your perception of reality is going to be fundamentally altered. Now, on psilocybin and on ayahuasca, you can be sitting with a group of people completely conscious. I've never done ayahuasca, by the way. You can be sitting in a group of people completely conscious of the presence of these other people. You can have a conversation with them, but at the same time, you are seeing all kinds of weird stuff. You're having another sort of, your brain is doing two things at the same time. You are now experiencing two levels of reality at the same time. A perceived reality and actual reality are happening at the same time. And this is why when we talk about Skinwalker Ranch, we have to be very careful, because much of what happens on Skinwalker Ranch, just pretend for a moment that everybody who's ever been to the ranch or has studied the ranch, and I had an opportunity to go to the ranch, and I didn't go. I wanted to, and it fell through, but I was about to go. Everybody that's been on the ranch, let's pretend for a moment that they all took psilocybin. They all were tripping, basically, on the ranch. So let's just pretend that everybody who's ever been on the ranch, before they ever step foot on the ranch, they ate some mushrooms. It wouldn't be difficult to explain their experiences at that point, would it? No, you could explain anything. You could explain anything that happens on that ranch if you just preface it with, Everybody who had these experiences was tripping on psilocybin or drank ayahuasca. And we would all go, oh, okay, that's why they saw this. That's why they saw, you know, whatever weird phenomena happening. And so obviously that's not the case, but substitute psilocybin for virtual reality scenario. Being induced by the grays.
Layer of technology we can't explain.
In order to alter the perception of the people in the vicinity, why? To cover up what they're doing there.
Can I ask you something? Would that explain the radiation exposures?
The radiation, I think, has to do with the base under the ground. So I do believe there's a base under the ground. I talked to the late Kevin Burns about this. Now, Kevin Burns was a friend of mine, and Kevin Burns was the producer of Ancient Aliens. And I met with Kevin on multiple occasions, and I got to know Kevin, and Kevin wanted me to go to the ranch. They're doing the show out there, you know, I don't know if it's still ongoing, but Skinwalker Ranch show,
yep, Skinwalker
I believe
Ranch.
On the History Channel. So Kevin produced that show, Prometheus Entertainment. He was the president of Prometheus Entertainment. And Kevin, I was talking to him one day, and he wanted me to go on the ranch, and he asked me what I thought about the ranch and what was going on. And I told him, I think there's a gray alien base under there. And he concurred. He also thought that that was what was going on. So, and of course, Kevin died in 2020 or 2021. He passed away. But I was supposed to go to the ranch, or at least Kevin wanted me to go to the ranch. And I actually was going to bring my partner, Gary Haven, who you know, and we were going to bring our ground penetrating radar drone technology to the ranch. But that never materialized. So the point is, I think that the radiation on the ranch can be explained by the activity of the grays there. And perhaps there's a military base under that ranch, a top secret military base, beyond top secret, a cosmic level clearance base under the ranch, or a joint base. You know, and do joint bases exist? And when I say joint bases, I mean alien human bases. Do they exist? I don't know. I tend to think they do. I don't know. Of course, nobody knows. No researcher knows. So now, that's not to say that everything that happens on that ranch is perceptual, is just purely perceptual, that your perception is being altered. No, I think it's a mix of two things. I think people are actually experiencing having physical encounters on the ranch and are having their perception altered. Both of those things are happening at the same time, and there's a reason that it's happening. It's not arbitrary. Nothing is arbitrary. Nothing is arbitrary when you're dealing with sentient beings. Nothing is arbitrary. There's always a reason. The grays are not, when you deal with gray aliens and the abduction phenomenon, it is not an amorphic phenomenon. It's not a psychedelic experience. It is a very programmed, logical, methodical program, let's say, that you are subjected to as an abductee. And there's a reason for it. And I think the same can be said of the ranch. Now, there are weird things that happen at the ranch. For example, if you read Keller and Knapp's book,
Hunt for Skinwalker.
I believe it's called Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Yeah, that's an excellent book.
I can't remember if that's the name, just the name of the documentary film that was made about it, or if that's actually the name of the book too. I'm looking over at my bookshelf to see if I can see it, but anyway, it's by those two authors that I just cited, and they describe some experiences on the ranch that are very interesting. The NIDS group, there's a scientific investigation done that they talk about. And it was financed by the billionaire Bigelow, and it was a scientific investigation, very well done. And they had some very bizarre things happen. One of the things that happened on that ranch was that they encountered a creature. They saw it. on multiple occasions. And this creature was a weird type of a wolf creature. And it would seem on the outset that that creature is some sort of a supernatural thing, right? It's a sort of like wolf looking creature that was attacking the cattle one time or something like that. And
it was closely related to what they would describe as a dire wolf.
Exactly.
5 foot tall.
But that's a different wolf. That wolf is the wolf that they describe as the bulletproof wolf.
Yes.
There were other ones there. Yeah, right. That's different. But this other creature, it was a different kind of wolf type animal. It wasn't as big as that one, that dire wolf. And they described it in great detail. And guess what? There's one of those stuffed 40 minutes from my house in Ennis, Montana, in a museum. It's stuffed. Somebody killed it in Montana. It's real. It's a real creature. It's a real animal. And it's exactly what's described in the book. And it's sort of a mystery here. Nobody really knows what it is. I've done some research on it. And it's 40 minutes from half an hour from my house, let's say, this museum. And that wolf is there. And not the bulletproof wolf. That bulletproof wolf, I believe, is something altogether different. But my point is this. People want to take the term supernatural and just paint with broad strokes over everything that is inexplicable, that we cannot explain. It's a very useful term, but it's at the same time, it has no explanatory power. The term supernatural has no explanatory power. It does not explain anything. It doesn't give us any answers about anything.
I believe
people feel like if they say, oh, that's supernatural, that they've explained something.
Yeah.
You have not explained anything, nothing. You're just saying it's an enigma. That's what you're saying when you say it's supernatural.
I believe at times it's a poor excuse to describe technology in a barbaric sense, right? You know, back in the day, everything that used to happen was magic. If you pulled someone back from the Lord's time, from Jesus' time, and you put him today, him or her today, in today's society, they would probably faint at half the technology that we have.
They would think the internet is sorcery.
Exactly. Now, just imagine, and the big-headed dog wolf things, all right? We've seen stuff like that here in Texas. We have a creature that's in South Texas that people called Chupacabra for a while, but it was shot, it was stuffed. The game warden actually came and certified, verified it, and now it's in possession of this lady at her house on a ranch, and no one can really explain what the animal is. Even the genomes don't come across exactly the same as a dog or a wolf. It's some sort of a weird hybrid.
Yeah.
Those things are out there. There are plenty of different times where we're going to see just that one strange, weird animal that no one can explain, right? My problem with Skinwalker Ranch is between the orbs that project that dread and doom and fear that they talk
about. They do. Yeah.
And
they
can. The red and the blue orbs and what happened to the incineration of the rancher's three dogs and then the cattle mutilation.
Mm-hmm.
From a law enforcement stance, I'm a data-driven guy. I want to come and touch and see and feel it. I want to inspect it myself. I want to walk the crime scene. I want to be walked through witness testimony. I want key witness testimony because through years of doing this, I can start to put together a very good, clear map in my mind of what happened during this incident. And I call them all various incidents, like the NIDS research team. I think they did that properly. It was a research development team, but they did it based off of incidents. Now, the problem with this is not just that there is nefarious means to it, but being a kind of a victim of a cattle mutilation myself that happened in my back pasture. It's weird. It's absolutely weird. You can't explain it. When a cattle is completely exsanguinated, there's a monetary fiscal responsibility to that animal that hurts. And then it's very insidious because it happens during the day most of the time. Mm-hmm. When it happened, my family was in the back. I was coming home from work, and there was a young bull calf. He was fine. 10 minutes later, dead on the side of next to a fence, and ears cut off. That micro cut precision, like with a heated scalpel or the laser blade. The body's exsanguinated. You know, it's a 1,000-pound animal. How are you going to wrestle it to the ground? The toxicology came back as nothing.
The
genitalia.
I want you to consider something. Since you've had this experience, I want you to consider something. Cattle mutilations. I'm completely convinced that that's the Greys that are doing that. It could be a different faction, but I think it's the Greys. Now, I think we know how the UFO technology operates, at least the basics, the physics that it's operating on. And I think we know because of the testimony of Bob Lazar. And I'm going to say conclusively, from my perspective, Bob Lazar, his testimony is true and trustworthy. And I can say that with confidence because I've done my due diligence on the Lazar story, and so has George Knapp, by the way, who I talked to about the Lazar incident, the Lazar story. And Bob Lazar was not lying. He was telling the truth, and it was verified that he was telling the truth. Many aspects of his testimony have been verified. And it took a while to verify some of it. It took a decade, you know. But many aspects of his story have been verified today. And Lazar claimed to have worked with a contractor, a military contractor that was tasked with reverse engineering and operating alien craft, specifically saucers. And Lazar was on a team that was working with a saucer that he called, he dubbed the sports model, because it was very much intact, and it was a very sleek saucer. There was multiple saucers, and this was over at the S4 facility at Groom Lake. And Lazar describes the technology that he was working with, and he was, what they were trying to do is to figure out the propulsion system, the energy source, the reactor. And he was working with a reactor that he concluded, and he did this video about it too. And it's sort of this cheesy video he did, you know, back in the 90s, where he drives out in the desert in his sports car, and he gets out of his sports car and he starts to talk about his experience, and he breaks down the physics of what he was working with. And I think it's an incredibly informative video. And I think he's right. I'm a layperson, I'm not a physicist, but I'm familiar with physics. I'm not unfamiliar with, let's say, an entry level into physics, and let's say physics 101. And Lazar describes the reactor that he was working with. He describes it as a matter antimatter reactor.
Element 115, right?
That used element 115, right? So matter antimatter, back in the 90s, you know, back in the 90s, most people were unfamiliar with antimatter. We were familiar with it from Star Trek. Star Trek used a matter antimatter reactor, right? To jump space. So Lazar's describing this reactor, small reactor that uses matter antimatter. And why matter antimatter? Because it's the most explosive substance that we know of. It's the most powerful energy source that we know of. And guess what? We now can produce antimatter ourselves. Where do we do it? We do it at CERN and other colliders. And antimatter is real. This isn't science fiction. It's real. We know that antimatter and matter collide and annihilate each other always, and that it creates an explosion, and that explosion, if harnessed, would be much more powerful than an atomic bomb, let's say. So this antimatter reactor, it uses element 115. That also has been discovered here on Earth. We've been able to isolate an isotope of element 115 for a brief period of time. I believe it's called muscovium now. So it's now on our periodic table. That's validation of Lazar's story. He was talking about element 115 a long time before we actually were able to isolate it in a lab. and I believe it happened in Russia. So we now know, now the scientific community knows about element 115, right? It's on the periodic table, not all periodic tables, but on some periodic tables. So element 115 is real, and it's called exotic matter. And they use it, this exotic matter, because it has properties that are unlike normal matter. And so without getting in bogged down into scientific physics, you know, principles of physics related to this, which I'm not a physicist, I understand the rudiments of it. So by utilizing element 115, they're able to take advantage of antimatter reactions. And what do they do with them? According to Lazar, they use them to generate gravity fields. They use them, let's put it in very simple terms, the gravity waves, I should say. They distort the space-time continuum around the saucer. So they can create gravity waves, and the saucer essentially is pulled through space and time. And or it tumbles through space is the way that I think that Lazar explains it. And it creates a space-time distortion around the craft that when it's fully energized, you can't, the craft is invisible. I think Lazar says completely invisible when it's fully energized, because not because it disappears into a multidimensional world or because it's not really a physical object, rather because it's distorting gravity. It's distorting the space-time around it. Okay?
But that kind of makes sense, because a black hole can actually distort light. It can pull in light, and it can actually blind stars behind its field as it's
because
passing
of gravity.
By.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's kind of almost a similar technology that the light within our spectrum.
You can envision this craft moving around, this physical craft, and when it's energized, it's distorting this space-time around it. It's distorting the fabric of the universe around it. Okay? And there's a field, there's a gravity field around it. All right. So here's my question. If you're distorting space-time, if you're distorting the fabric of space, the material world, according to Einsteinian physics, that means that you're not just distorting the spatial dimension of that fabric, you're also distorting the time dimension of that fabric, okay? So I want you to think about this. So a saucer descends in your backyard, in your field, and as it moves over your cattle, it's essentially in a time bubble, because it's distorting space-time around it. So there's a time differential. The inside of that distortion, the time is different than outside. So what may seem like a split second to you, that the cattle, the ears are cut off and the eyes are taken out and cored out and the blood is taken out, it may seem like, hey, we just saw that cow 15 minutes ago in broad daylight. But in reality, the procedure took more time. But it happened within this time, this space-time distortion, this gravity field.
That's okay? Actually very well described. I've never heard it said that.
When the saucer moves over that, wherever that saucer is moving, whatever is encompassed in that gravity field, in that distorted space-time gravity field, the time is going to move differently now. How different? I don't know. That's a question that a guy like Bob Lazar would have to contemplate. But it just seems logical to me that there would be a distortion. So, and I don't know. I don't think it's days. I think it might be minutes. Maybe it's 20 minutes. Maybe there's a 20-minute difference between the time that's passing inside of that gravity field and the time that's passing outside of it. Maybe there's a 20-minute distortion. But that's a lot of time. So that's another perceptual thing here. Now, that's not your perception being altered, but it is a scenario in which time is not happening the same inside of that, or in the vicinity of that saucer as it is happening outside of the effects of that of the gravity waves. So, so let's just envision that saucer coming over to your field. It descends. It does whatever it does to it pulls the cow up onto the craft. It's mechanically, of course, it's not somebody there with a surgical pen. I'm sure it's some kind of robotics mechanically processing that cow, just like we mechanically process animals today, but on a much more advanced level, right? With lasers or whatever, boom, boom, boom. Who knows how long that takes? Maybe it only takes 2 minutes to process that cow, suck the blood out of it and so forth. And then boom, drops it back on the ground and the saucer is gone. Now, in reality, that whole process took 10 minutes, right? Inside of the gravity field. Outside that distortion, maybe it was just 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And so, again, you know, it's what Arthur C. Clarke famously said, that paraphrase it, because I can't remember the exact phrasing of this, but any sufficiently advanced technology is going to look like magic to us. And just like you said, our sophisticated technology would look like magic to people living in the Middle Ages. I mean, you know, have you ever been to an amusement park, and at the end of the amusement park, they do a laser lights and fireworks show, right? And they have the laser stuff going on in the sky. My God, if we were to go back into the Middle Ages and project those same lasers into the sky, people would think that the gods had come down to the earth and were talking to them. They would bow down before them and offer sacrifices.
All hail Mickey Mouse.
Exactly. You know? Okay. Well, that's very easy for us to understand. Of course they would. And so what about we are the, as you say, the barbarians, and these entities are the advanced civilization. And so everything they're doing looks like magic to us, but it's not. It's just physics. It doesn't have to be multi-dimensions or supernatural. It's just physics. It's advanced. It's an advanced understanding of physics. We probably will be able to do that. In fact, we can fly their craft now. And that's another thing that Lazar talked about, that he didn't operate the craft, but he saw it in operation and, you know, would take off and hover and do a little maneuvering and then come back down to the ground. We were doing that. Our engineers were figuring out how to use their technology. So, when people think about cattle mutilations and people think about, you know, some of these aspects, the phenomenon, Skinwalker Ranch, remember two things. You're dealing with, A, you're dealing with exceedingly advanced technology. And B, you're dealing with virtual reality scenarios.
Let me ask you a question. Based off of Skinwalker Ranch, and we're at 55 minutes right now, you got to give me a yes or no answer if we're going to keep going or not. We've seen how they can process these animals, and we've seen the images, we've seen the videos of them doing it, and then they just poof, drop it, and it looks like a very professional butcher took to this animal, you know, ripping out hip joints. Now, that's extremely hard to do. And very detailed cuts. Why haven't they done that to people and just poof, dropped them on the highway?
Well, there are stories of that happening, actually. I've seen some stories in places like Brazil where they have found humans processed in the same way as those cattle mutilations. Although I will say it is uncommon. They don't need human beings for that purpose. Whatever they're using the cows for, they're not using human beings for the same purpose. In fact, they're using us for a different reason. They're using human beings for our genetic material, and they're using men. Let's be, you know, a little bit crude about it. They're using men for their sperm, and they're using women for their wombs. And so because the program is to create hybrids. That's the program.
We're at 57 minutes. We're going to have to leave it right there. I think we only dusted off a little bit of the knowledge that you know on this. Man, we got to get you back on to keep talking about this, because now we've just gone into another layer of this enigma of a situation with UFOs, with aliens, abductions, And I'd love to have you back on to give us the rest of your knowledge on that. But for right now, ladies and gentlemen, sorry, we're going to have to conclude it. My name is Doug Thornton. This is Timothy Alberino. And you've been listening to American Vindicta. We're out.
Thank Let you. Me say, if I can, people, I'm going to be talking about this stuff at my conference in Nashville, Tennessee, from the 6th to the 7th of May. I'm going to be digging deep into this topic. And one of the topics I'm talking about is specifically the alien stuff, UFOs and alien abduction. And I'm going to be addressing this. So people want to go to the conference, you can get tickets on my website, timothyalberino.com.
Yep. That's awesome. Hey, we're going to see Tim again, and we're going to keep picking his mind next time we talk to him. So everyone, thank you for listening. Have a good one. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.